You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Good Tuesday morning and welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Sarah Eisen here back with Jim Cramer. Carl has the morning off. David is on assignment. He's going to join us, though, to talk Twitter in a moment. Take a look at futures right now. Not much follow through to that positive intraday turnaround yesterday where the market ended higher. Dow futures under a little pressure, down 180, S&P down 19, NASDAQ down 58. We've got a lot of earnings to digest, and we're going to begin on that earnings front. A lot of industrials to get through. What does it tell us about the economy? UPS rising in the pre-market on better than expected quarterly results, helped by higher shipping rates. 3M also beating on both the top and bottom lines in the face of what it is calling a challenging global environment. And then there's General Electric moving lower despite a quarterly beat. The company is saying its outlook is trending toward the lower end of the range, citing inflation and other evolving pressures. GE CEO Larry Culp will be joining us later this hour. Key interview with the stock down about 5% pre-market. Jim, for 3M and UPS, the stocks are a little bit higher. Could have been worse. Right?
Absolutely. You know, 3M, new method of reporting, able to show you exactly what the organic growth is. Now, some people may object to the new method, which takes it so that you've got litigation risk off the table. You see how well they're doing. Consumer health and safety up 3.4%. I thought that was good. Healthcare plus. Church-based electric, a little disappointing. But, I mean, the overall safety and justice, okay. The overall takeaway I have is that if you want to look at 3M as a pure company without litigation, you'll like it. But is that right? Do we really just asterisk litigation when you've got a giant settlement in Belgium over
the chemicals
over water? Remember, groundwater is a sacred issue. And then you have the combat arms situation where you have tinnitus caused by battle, of which there's going to be continual problems. They did win the last case, which is important. They've lost a couple of cases. But if you look at the litigation you're talking about, they've had 17 cents, 20, you know, 18 cents, 14, 13 cents. There have been a series of litigation issues that make you feel like, is it really one off or is it just something you have to live with 3M? Mike Roman doing a good job, but...
But that's an overhang. Actually, the stock has turned around. It's lower.
Well, I think that when people look at the, you know, look, what a groundwater and veterans who can't hear as well because of tinnitus, an issue that I've looked in very close. Not great.
No. What about organic revenue growth? It came in a little bit light, according to some of the analysts. What did we learn about the end market?
If I see 2% organic for 3M, I remember the old 3M that obviously had higher, but I mean, everyone's got these secular issues. I'm calling them secular now, which is that you've got geopolitical risk.
Challenging global environment.
Yes. So let's just say, okay, I don't want to run to get it. The balance sheet, good. It makes me feel a little better, given the fact that they have had what I call endless litigation. I like that the litigation is up front. It's no longer footnote number 64. At the same time, and they did, like I said, the combat arms is not all losses. But if you wanted to right now, you could sign up for the combat arms litigation and they'll represent you. It's kind of like if a leaf blew in. They're trying to get all 280,000 soldiers. So I'd rather switch to Raytheon, which is a little bit better, or GE, which obviously I'm going to have Larry Culp on. GE is something that's problematic.
Lower end of the range.
Lower end of the range.
Doesn't
you
sound
can't
good.
Do lower end of the range.
Right. Even if you maintain the numbers, actually, the guidance.
And Raytheon, I think, is actually a good number, but there's so much black box we don't know. Raytheon being so directly involved with the proxy state that has become Ukraine.
I do feel like if you take a lot of these numbers in aggregate, you can make a bullish case for the market that corporate America is in pretty good shape. The balance sheets, to your point, are strong. They're investing. The capital expenditures are up in R&D, and they, for the most part, are have pricing power. They're passing it along. Look at UPS. Shipments down, but the average revenue per shipment was up.
So, yes,
so these things are going well. The problem is this the peak? Are they just taking years of pricing power
I mean,
and putting it in now, and then as demand softens, that's going to be a problem.
I mean, look, we have China. It's obviously off the grid. you have Ukraine. I mean, the reverberations are Ukraine. We're going to talk about PepsiCo. It's from everybody. Everyone has Ukraine. But look, United Technologies, the old United Technologies, Raytheon, you need titanium. Titanium is sourced in Russia. But I agree with you on the overall analysis. There's almost like a great man theory. I don't want to get too deep into it, but some of these CEOs are really doing a remarkable job at a bad time. Judy Marks yesterday owed us 4 price target cuts. That's wrong. She just is doing an incredible job.
Better in China. I saw that interview.
You've got service revenue, whether it be for Raytheon or service revenue for Otis, and yet you see the price target cuts. I mean, Mark Bitzer delivered a number that was really extraordinary. Whirlpool. What was the headline? Demand waning. Okay, so I spent a lot of time with Mark Bitzer. What's the real headline? Demand's on fire. This kind of thing really just bothers me. The reportage is so lacking in rigor. The fact is that if you're Doug Yearley from Toll Brothers, you're going to Home Depot and Lowe's in order to be able to get dishwashers because there aren't enough of them. And he's selling Europe, which he might get $5 billion. He might get $5 billion. It's a very small company. He's got a 4% yield. And this is a company where Mark Bitzer has put on the radar screen. They could have a Chinese bidder and 2 Korean bidders.
Didn't they lower guidance?
Oh, that's nonsense. That's the kind of nonsense that some computer generated that doesn't even know how to read. I'm telling you, in second grade. I was tracked in the dumb class.
We do have a soundbite. Mark Bitzer,
sure,
obviously they're
that.
Dealing with inflation like everybody else. Here's what he told Jim last night, Whirlpool CEO on that.
COVID-induced inflation, I think we had a pretty good sense, and we dealt with it very well. And we also thought we had a pretty good grip on inflation coming into this year. But now all of a sudden you had a war-induced inflation on top of a COVID-induced inflation, so kind of reinforcing, flaring up. So that was the only one which caught us a little bit surprised. Probably like most companies, nobody had war on their horizon. But now we're catching up on pricing. We issued new pricing, in effect, in April, and we're fully catching up. And I think it's well-digested market, and if you have strong brands and strong products, you can sell.
Strong brands and strong products. We're going to talk
That's
about Pepsi.
Yeah.
We saw that with Coca-Cola. People don't realize we have companies that have developed brand power. This is against Bosch. They are, I could say that, although they do want to exit Europe, they're against LG, against Samsung, Whirlpool kills. Don't forget, more than 50% is actually in the kitchen. So they are going to rule from Alaska to Patagonia. Bye.
Bye. And what about this restructuring? What are they doing with the Europe? It's 20 or so percent
Europe
of the business?
Europe is the weak area. Remember that? I remember when they moved into Europe probably about 20 years ago, and I knew that they were going to get the clock clean because basically what happens when you move into Europe is that you're up against the great German companies. But Maytag did well. Remember, they have a lot of brands. I really like the stock. I think it should be bought, maybe even aggressively.
It is up, actually, pre-market.
Well, it should. I mean, when you decide to sell a division of which you can have 3 bidders for, I like the story. Buyback, dividend. I'm just pointing out something positive in a sea of red, where the red is really dictated by the futures, not by anyone who's actually done the granular work like you and I have.
Right. Well, it was interesting yesterday in the session and the turnaround. Did you see Alphabet outperforming ahead of earnings?
Alphabet is direct advertising. You know, a lot of people want, and we'll get to Twitter, a lot of people are trying to lump all of online together. Unfortunately, I started an online company in 1995, and there's 2 streams. You want subscription or you want advertising, and then within advertising, you want direct response, you want brand. Now, I think that Twitter was about, by the way, to break out on direct ad, and I want to give them that credit. But the fact is, point blank, Alphabet is the single best ROI of any company in the world if you want to advertise, and no one can dispute that.
We got some breaking news. We got to get to Seema Modi. Seema, what have you got?
Sarah, some news here. Carnival CEO Arnold Donald is stepping down as CEO after 9 years on the job. He will become vice chairman. The current COO, Josh Weinstein, will become the new CEO of Carnival, the world's largest cruise line. This comes, of course, amid a tenuous 2 years. And I will say, at the last shareholder meeting, there was some pushback on Carnival CEO Arnold Donald's compensation package in 2021 of $15 million. But of course, he has played a leading role in fighting hard for this industry to recover. And the industry is in recovery mode, with Carnival seeing around 75% of its ships back at sea. They've been moving on pricing and putting a lot out there in terms of marketing to get more customers to book ships. This summer will be the critical season for this industry to really mark this recovery. But big news here, this is the world's largest cruise operator, and Arnold Donald, he's been the face of this industry, now stepping down as CEO after 9 years on the job. Sarah and Jim.
So you and Wilf interviewed him, and I defy you to be able to say that he didn't save that company in the dark
100%.
Days of March and April.
He came on in the darkest of times.
Yes, he did.
I called their ships a petri dish. I mean, this was like right after COVID hit, and never thought you were going to go cruising again.
And yet
he
shows
defended
up.
The company.
This man's a great man. And those who, I mean, I want to take on anyone who says that this guy didn't save this company. The company should have been bankrupt. If you remember, at the exact bottom, he was able to do a couple of bond and stock deals. And he didn't get a great coupon. But that company should have gone under. The Petri just should have gone under. Instead, I'm ready to sail, although I'm probably going to Norwegian.
Are you? Why?
I like the Haven level, and I think Frank Del Rio's done a good job.
Why? Because you think the safety, they've done enough with the safety measures?
They also
faced a tough CDC, which regulated them, unlike...
Well,
the airlines.
If it weren't for Governor DeSantis, then the ships would have been absolutely pristine because it's not Petri dish because Frank Del Rio wanted to make it so you got tested right before you went on. I'll sail again. Absolutely. Are you kidding me?
Stock
although
isn't
I'm
back
not,
to
you know, my daughter
highs.
Went on that music cruise that they did with Norwegian. You and I are going to pass on that, okay?
I'm not such a cruiser. Let's hit Twitter, obviously, because huge news yesterday afternoon when Twitter finally accepted Elon Musk's $44 billion offer to take the company private. The all-cash deal valuing the company at $54.20 a share. It's a 38% premium to Twitter's closing price on April 1st. Last week, Jim spoke out about getting this deal done. Remember what he said. Listen.
If he wants it, again, he's got to go to them this weekend. Elon, listen to me. I know you don't. My offer stays at this price until Friday, next Friday, and then it goes down to 48. It's an exploding offer the way we had at Goldman Sachs. You got 48, and then it's going to be 46. He's going to do that. It's going to give him an exploding offer. It's really going to be great.
Well, actually, it didn't take that long.
No, well, look, they had a real process. Brett Taylor, the co-CEO of Salesforce, you know, young fellow. But absolutely committed to fairness. Let's not forget the role that Egon Durbin played, okay? He's the Silver Lake fellow who also did the remarkable Dell situation. Michael Dell's one of my heroes. So you had Durbin on the board. You had Brett running a real process. And you had the possibility of 20 down versus 3 up. You're going to get sued by somebody. There'll be some inventive lawyer right now who says they should have gotten better, best and final. They should have gotten 56. Would you rather be sued for 5? Or for 20. We had an incredible breakdown in these stocks in the period between when Musk took it up and this weekend. You know, I got to tell you, this business, which we're going to see, because obviously Zuckerberg's going to have down numbers. Everybody knows that.
Tomorrow.
This business, there are a lot of people are literally saying, okay, I mean, you got to fill it here. It's not bad. I mean, you've got Wolf just saying, this is it, broader bubble, it's all over. And then I try to think, if you're a Coke or Pepsi, where are you going to reach people? Where are you going to reach people in volume?
Well, they advertise on all of them. Meta,
yeah, where do you
Snap.
Buy your G?
So what? You think that there's still advertising
buy
potential
on Amazon.
Here on
Amazon.
Twitter? What about Twitter? What about Twitter? Future of Twitter's ad business?
I thought that Ned Siegel was very close to being able to have a breakout with direct response where you'd be able to give them money and be able to make money. But I think that David may have another view entirely about what we're talking about.
I think the aforementioned David Faber joins us now by phone. He's off on assignment, but couldn't miss an M&A opportunity like this, David, to weigh in. What can you tell us?
No, I can't. That's right. I had to do it yesterday during your show, too, Sarah, as well. But listen, you don't see deals like this very often, as long as I've been doing this. And in fact, you rarely see unsolicited bids that actually end up with a deal as quickly as this did at the price that was done. I mean, the only one I can come back to, or I should say originally offered, is Murdoch and Dow Jones, where the 60 stayed at 60. Of course, it took a while to get the Bancroft family in line. This really didn't take a long time at all, I mean, to Jim's point in some way. Think about the fact that he crossed 5%, on the 14th of March. Of course, we should have learned about it on the 24th of March. We didn't until a bit later. And now that we are at a deal where he's buying this company for $44 billion. But a couple of quick things to keep in mind here, just in the old M&A tick-off various key factors sheet, so to speak. Could take as long as 6 months because of the various regulatory approvals that will be required. Yesterday, Sarah, when we were speaking, there had been some thought perhaps that it might be a bit quicker, but it requires, multiple jurisdictions, the EU, the UK, Japan. So let's call it September, October before Elon Musk actually owns this asset. The break fee, we should get a merger agreement perhaps by the end of the day. I'm hearing it's going to be in the low range, meaning what Twitter would have to pay were they to find another bidder. Let's call it somewhere around 2.5%, something like that. which means, listen, if things were to change dramatically over the next 6 months and some strategic were suddenly to decide they wanted to own it, it wouldn't cost them that much of a penalty to go ahead and do it. That's not going to happen. I think Jim and I both on day one did not expect them to accept 5420, but certainly something I've reported many times was there was likely not to be another strategic out there. Jim and I talked about that a lot when I'd say Salesforce, he'd say no, Disney, no way. And private equity obviously could never mount a bid. As for whether there'll be a reverse termination fee, in other words, what Musk would pay, should he get out? No. He's got a, you know, there's going to be strong language requiring him to get all the regulatory approvals and push through on those. And he's got his financing. Of course, the $21.5 billion in equity that he is guaranteed will be interesting to see. Does he sell Tesla shares to fund it? Does he bring in or syndicate his equity to some extent to potentially other people who might have an interest in owning a stake in Twitter as a private company? These are all on the come. And, Jim, obviously a larger conversation as well about what this company will look like when Musk is running it as a private entity as well, the world's richest man with one of its most powerful platforms.
You know, David, the margin loan that this man is taking out is monumental. Do you think Morgan Stanley has that stock in hand? Because this is something, maybe Aubrey McLennan, late Aubrey McLennan did something like this, but most of us would think this is reckless, frankly.
Yeah, well, first, I don't think, you know, it's not going to be your typical margin loan 3 to 4 times, right? It's going to be a lot tighter than that, right? You know that, Jim.
Right.
I think they've got it in hand. I think they've got the $13 billion. By the way, those include that includes an enormous number of banks, as you know, the debt financing for it. I'm not questioning any of that. I do still wonder where he's, you know, again, he's guaranteed the $21.5 billion in equity. We know he's good for it, but how's he going to raise it? And how much will it be going to other people? You know, will Mark Andreessen want to step up? Well, so who knows? Maybe that amounts to a few billion dollars along the way, or maybe it's more. I don't know. But that will be interesting, Jim. Does he have to sell some Tesla shares? Can he do other things that will raise that money for him?
Well, that's something we're going to watch
here in some way.
Yeah. Okay, David, put me in the boardroom this weekend. Is it Egon Durbin talking? Is it Brett talking? Who's really doing the decision making here?
That's a great question. I think it's a lot of different people, but certainly those two voices were very important ones. You know, I reported this yesterday. There was no pushback from this board on 5420. They got their management projections. They know them. They got the presentations. You made the point, of course, how the market has made that 38% premium. That was on the April 1st price. Look a lot better than that, right, given the comp set and what it's done over the last 3 weeks. They knew there were no other strategics there. They knew there was not really any chance, as I said, that there could be another bid mounted by so-called private equity. That wasn't going to happen. And so when they looked at it and thought about, well, we can get, what, 24 times enterprise value over EBITDA, 6 times revenue, and he said, take it or leave it. Again, I'm told when they started talking on Saturday morning, he's like, I want a yes or no decision. And he sort of said, I'll let your holders decide otherwise, or you can let them decide. Let me go ahead with a tender offer. Now, that was not going to happen. But nonetheless, it sort of presents to the board this possibility of, you know, fine, you don't want to decide, just don't make a decision at all, and we'll see what they have to say. But when they move fast, I mean, they move fast, and they said, that's it. It's a rarity in so many different ways, including, of course, accepting the first bid.
Well, he's also got another supporter in Jack Dorsey, the company founder, who has tweeted that Elon is the singular solution I trust. So clearly a backer on that front. David, you know, we talked to Harvey Pitt, former SEC regulator, of course, may run into some issues here. Remember, it's kind of comical now that Elon first filed this disclosure as a 13G, that he was going to have a passive investment in Twitter, whether that was just an oversight or his intentions changed. I guess we'll dig into that. But what is your reporting? They can have some issues, but not necessarily block this deal. Are there any antitrust concerns? Elizabeth Warren in Congress has already made some noise, and this is becoming increasingly a partisan issue.
That will become a question. On antitrust law itself, Sarah, it's very hard to imagine any possibility of them really moving to block this and succeeding. But it doesn't mean that Elizabeth Warren or that other congressional action somehow couldn't potentially put up a roadblock in some fashion. I can remember, you know, Pfizer, right, when they wanted to do it, the inversion, Jim, remember, with Brent
Sure.
Saunders' company.
And unexpectedly, Treasury put up a roadblock that killed the deal. It's hard to imagine that will happen here, but Sarah, that's the kind of thing that would need to happen, something unexpected, something outside of sort of the typical process, because from a pure regulatory standpoint, from antitrust view right now, there's no overlaps. What do you, SpaceX and Tesla somehow have something to do with Twitter? I don't, maybe Starlink? I don't see it.
He tweets about
them. But David, aren't you shocked that the board presentation for current management basically came up, let's say, two of clubs? Because usually board can come out and say, listen, I got a path to go to 90. Did they not have a path, or did they have a path that people felt wasn't going to get there?
I think you're right, Jim. I don't think they had a path. I mean, not a path
no
that the
path.
Board
That's
necessarily fully believed in the short term,
no
or even in the medium term.
Uncomfortable reality,
right?
Piper says.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
Prague didn't. He was giving
the numbers
some
look
hand.
Like. Yeah.
Well, anyway.
But, you know,
David,
thank you for calling in, man.
CEO didn't get a chance. You know that Prague didn't get a chance to actually.
Yeah, Prague didn't. He sure didn't, did he?
No.
He did a good paper at MIT in 2012 about what to do in the situation.
No, Wedbush calls it a last resort. David Faber, you could go back to your assignment now. Thank you. We'll let you know if we need
all right,
to.
Thanks
as
for
always.
Going in, Sarah. Okay.
We're doing commercial free?
No, it's fine. I just have one quick question for you, which is what does it mean for Tesla? Because we did see Tesla go down. You can imagine a reality, let's say, so Snap warned a little bit of maybe a turn in the advertising cycle. Let's say that really gets hit hard and Twitter suffers. Does Tesla get punished?
I don't think so. First of all, I actually think there's a pretty good group of people at Twitter. They just haven't had a chance to execute. I think he's going to take a long time to be able to evaluate it. But remember, he does have a team. We saw that on the last Tesla call, by the way, where he did intervene. But he has a team. People think he's a one-man show. He's the opposite of that. He has a tremendous number.
You would not know it. We got to go. Still to come, what Warner Brothers Discovery just said on its call about the end of the road for CNN Plus. And taking another look at futures here, we've taken a lug lower, down 246 as we head into the opening bell. S&P futures down 27. More Squawk on the Street. Stay straight ahead.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Take a look at the biggest losers into the pre-market here as we head into the bell. GE right there, down 5.25%. The company did reaffirm its 2022 outlook range, but said results were trending toward the low end of the range. Jim is going to speak with Larry Culp, the CEO of GE, in just a few minutes, right after that stock opens. We'll be right back.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until
the Singapore presentation is at
3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
That's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
3 minutes till the open. Time now for Cramer's Mad Dash as we count down to the opening bell. D.R. Horton, home builder.
Yeah,
not so shabby.
Well, the largest. David usually asks me what's the key to this market, and it's easy to say that it's Raytheon or it's GE or PepsiCo. But you know, the largest home builder reports a very good number. They solid all the way around. Big net income, $1.44 billion, $4 a share. It's much better than expected. But the reason I talk about this is that Donald Horton says housing market conditions remain strong despite the rise in mortgage rates. So let's put our heads, let's be in Jay Powell's head. I mean, does Jay say, darn it, I mean, when am I going to cool off this housing market? Or does he say, hey, listen, I'm doing it slowly and get a soft landing? And so Horton may be in the crosshairs. I would have loved to see moderation, but we didn't get that. Moderation went from the point of view that I don't want to hear that things are still red hot in housing. Mortgage rates have gone up a great deal. But the answer is it's red hot in housing.
It's hot in housing, but the orders were a little bit lower. They're benefiting from higher prices.
Absolutely.
That's driving revenue.
Absolutely.
So it's not like
and they have a lot of they have
a bubble market kind of report. And they're warning that orders are lower, although they did raise their revenue.
They raised their revenue. I mean, to me, that's the story here.
They're doing well.
But look,
and the stock was down 32% into earnings.
Well, that's
this year.
Okay. So let's get into that.
Yeah.
People who are very smart are saying, you know what, this is completely discounting 2000, 2008, and a scenario like the actual COVID. Yesterday's upgrade of AutoNation was really extraordinary, saying, look, the valuation has never been as low other than those three cases. I could make that Horton is similar. The valuation has never been that low other than those three cases. Now, we know that valuation itself is never reason to buy. But D.R. Horton was buying the heck out of their stock. So I just say, let's keep track of it, because housing is what has to stop. Now, Whirlpool would tell you it ain't stopping. And remember, the work from home movement is still very important.
Demand exceeds the pace of supply. That was the other part of that sentence.
Right.
And that's the story.
And there we have, once again, other than copper, everything's going up in these things. Copper, Dan Niles mentioned down a lot, but that's
down
China.
Down here to date now.
That's China. We haven't even
China's
talked
a problem.
China.
China was down again, even though they are going to stimulate.
They
which is
are,
the bull side of that story.
Look, the self-inflicted nature of the China, we're going to look back and say, there used to be a question about who lost China from the State Department. Who lost China from China? That is what this story is going to be if they don't fix it up.
It does appear to be self-inflicted. By the way, there are the opening bells and the CNBC real-time exchange on your screen here at the big board. The Arbor Day Foundation celebrating its 50th anniversary at the NASDAQ. We have Progyny. It's a fertility benefits management company. As we open up, we're down about 0.5% right now on the S&P 500. Yesterday's big comeback was led by the growth stocks, and today is going to be somewhat of a decisive day. We've got Alphabet and Microsoft earnings. Both of them have been under pressure pretty much all year long. We open with some gains in energy and materials. Crude oil goes the other way today. It was down yesterday. It's higher today. It's still below $100 a barrel. The softness in China has actually put some pressure on crude, which is helpful, but for the wrong reason.
Remember, our oil companies have decided to go for a return. It's certainly a new thing. It's going to keep a floor on oil. So I still think those stocks are terrific. Look, like yesterday when I said that you want to be careful about the upside, I feel it again. Think about it. We all, Microsoft's come down a great deal. Alphabet, I think, is going to have its sales at 16 times earnings. I mean, to listen to the commentary on Facebook slash Meta is to believe that Mark's selling asbestos. There is something there that he has. If he just talks about second half being able to defeat TikTok with Reels, then we're going to start saying, well, hold it, wait a second, maybe he's going to handle the mobile. Remember, he went from desktop to mobile? And then he went against Snap. Everyone told us that Snap was a destroyer. He's not a...
he's also spending $10 billion on the metaverse.
He's not Elon.
Right.
But he's also... he wasn't born yesterday.
Wanted to hit Pepsi because that'll be... It looks like a winner today. It's been back and forth in the pre-market. It's been a winner overall this year. A really strong quarter from PepsiCo.
Fantastic.
And it was across the board. It was Frito-Lay. It was Pepsi Beverages North America, which isn't always strong. It was Quaker, which is also not always strong.
Well, how about that?
And
they merged
all
Quaker with Frito-Lay, so they finally have mac and cheese Doritos. Yeah. My wife is very happy. It's changed from the Baconator.
It's a joke, but that innovation is what has kept their pricing power pretty strong, and that's really helping.
Absolutely. We tend to not see innovation in certain places that we should see innovation. I was shocked that with Russia, such a big part of their mosaic, they still came through with good numbers.
They did.
Yeah. Very impressive.
No, and they raised their revenue guidance.
The organic growth there is extraordinary.
The earnings guidance. Clearly, they're dealing with some cost pressures, as they all are. But I guess the question when it comes to a PepsiCo, or really even a Coke, Jim, is that these valuations have come up pretty far, and they're now trading at a pretty significant premium to the market and to their historical price.
Yeah,
we see why it's justified now, but can you be a buyer?
Well, I think the answer is if you're yield-oriented, yes. You buy some here and buy some lower. The ingenuity of Raymond LaGuardia, the ingenuity of James Quincy is rather extraordinary. I mean, take a look at what he's doing with Topo Chico, Quincy. He bought that for a little more than $200 million. That could be a $2 billion brand within the next 18 months.
It was very hard to get in New York City. Finally, it's back at Whole Foods, which is very exciting in my household. But it was tough to get. People go nuts for it, and now they're expanding it. Hard
right,
seltzer,
this is fizzy water, and the alcohol is going to be is taking off. I don't know if you've tried the Dew that
hard
has
dew.
Alcohol in it, the
no,
hard Dew.
No, I haven't tried
it. Yeah, my wife forbade it because of my blood pressure, which is controlled by Avastin. I don't know what she's so worried about. But I do like very much the fact that both Pepsi and Coke did well. And I think that they were somewhat conservative. I mean, when you get an 8% increase in core currency, someone wants to sell Pepsi. What, they want to sell for what? What do they want to do? I don't know. Look at Archer Daniels. I mean, there.
That
is
was a strong across the board.
Nice oligopoly, right? You got Cargo, you have them.
Well, they're in the right spot. I thought it was interesting that, well, first on Coke and Pepsi, you mentioned the currency aspect.
Yes.
The dollar continues to scream higher here. It's worth watching. We're now at levels back to pandemic when there was fear and people rushed into that safe haven U.S. dollar. Euro keeps tumbling. So that's going to hit results.
But let me hit you with something you know better than anyone else I know. That you know better than anyone else I know. If I look at the yen, I see a country in decline. Is that the case?
Well, if you look at their currency, it's at a 20-year low.
So what do we say?
Japan is not in decline. They're just not as hawkish when it comes to raising rates. They're still battling inflation, and they're still battling, you know, stagnation that they've been dealing with for years. And they're not going to do what Jay Powell or Christine Lagarde is doing, because they're just not dealing with those kind of inflationary environments. It's not a depressed economy. It's just, compared to everybody else, they're not experiencing the boom.
Demographics
are terrible.
Just terrible.
Aging population. But you know what? They're going to keep pressing for a weaker yen because it helps their exports, and it's happening maybe too fast for comfort, and that's
well,
a bit of a problem.
Do you think our president and his team are well aware of what's going on in terms of being able to send things over here like the old days in the late 80s.
The automakers are going to complain.
Right?
That's who faces some of the stiffer competition.
I agree with that, and they should complain. But, you know, they've given South Korea a free pass. We seem to be so inconsistent in our protecting of workers that it sometimes amazes me. But this yen decline is something that you taught me. You got to watch it, because we cannot just asterisk that country.
No. Eventually it's going to be painful, because you never want to see these things moving too fast and too far. And that's what's happening.
Right. How about the ruble saving people, because it's so high?
Well, who knows what's going on there? They're intervening, capital controls. Yeah, they've rescued their currency.
But don't you think it's amazing? I didn't mean to interrupt. Sorry. But it's amazing that you've got Raytheon Technologies and you basically have a proxy state of Ukraine, which is buying a huge amount of stuff, of which they don't really know how to use. I mean, this is kind of like Afghanistan, U.S. At one point, I thought it was U.S. versus North Vietnam when the Russians flooded North Vietnamese with tanks and artillery. But we're not going directly with the Russians.
The global spending is up across the board. It's coming from Europe, coming from the U.S., and it follows a cycle where it's been lower, unusually, for the last year or so.
Yes. What did you think of that Raytheon quarter? I mean, did you see the Whitney, the engines, the jet engines. I mean, that area, if that comes back, if the aerospace guys are right that Phil LeBeau interviewed, that is going to get us out of this morass. That's going to break us out, because you're talking about 30% growth. I mean, I thought that of the companies that is unchanged right now that I'm watching, the commercial aftermarket for Collins Aerospace, what a nice acquisition by Greg Hayes, up 39%. You've got Pratt & Whitney, it's up 37%. These are gigantic companies. Their biggest problem, of course, is labor, because you can't find people who know how to weld.
although aviation was strong in the GE quarter, which we'll get to in a moment.
Right.
We're done with Russia, full stop, according to Greg Hayes of Raytheon. I also want to hit Warner Discovery because it's down sharply. 7%.
Well, everyone's hitting it, so you might as well hit it.
Well, the CFO did comment and acknowledge, of course, the shutdown plans for CNN Plus on the company's conference call this morning. Listen.
Right or wrong, management has made a decision to invest a lot of, you know, the incoming funds into a number of investment initiatives. And as I'm looking under the hood here, again, CNN Plus is just one example, and I don't want to go through sort of a list of specific examples, but there's a lot of, you know, chunky investments that are lacking what I would view as a solid, you know, analytical financial foundation and meeting the ROI hurdles that I would like to see for major investments.
Ouch. Called CNN Plus a chunky investment.
That was disparaging.
Clearly not everyone was on the same page here. Zappos said that the company, junky.
It does seem that Plus was a suboptimal investment. It was ill-advised.
But it was chunky and junky.
Chunky.
Zavala is saying we're not trying to win the direct-to-consumer spending war. So really trying to sound prudent on the spending game, especially in light of Netflix's, I guess, subscriber loss.
I mean, didn't we think that a lot of the people who got that stock would say, well, wait a second, what did I get? Well, the answer is open wide for chunky.
Junky. The direct quote was junky.
Well, I think it's chunky.
It was chunky as well.
Well, you know what? We have a treat here. I'm calling it a treat because I'm a happy guy, which is the General Electric. Sarah, we happen to have Larry Culp, shares of General Electric, lower this morning after reporting first quarter results. And the company saying inflation and other pressures are weighing on its full year outlook. You know, Larry, it is great to have you on the show. Larry is the GE chairman and CEO. Good to see you, sir.
Good to be with you, Jim.
You know, Larry, you know what I'm going to do? I am going to start with the toughest thing, which is basically what J.P. Morgan said. Steve, dude, let's get the toughest stuff out of the way so then we can have a little fun. For the stock, says Steve Tusa, the dean from J.P. Morgan on this, or some people feel like it's Ahab, it was a miss, plain and simple, on almost all fronts. Profits were 12 cents below our model, below consensus number at the time of the February pre-announcement. And basically says that, you know what, you got to avoid this thing at all costs. So there, let's get it out of the way and talk about how maybe that view is short-sighted.
Jim, I think we started the year here in 2022 pretty much where we thought we would be and where we talked about this in late January when we wrapped up 2021. We knew this would be a slow start to the year, and I think that's what you saw. But I think we're encouraged by orders being up 13%, very strong demand. You were talking about aerospace a moment ago. We saw that in our own business with orders up well over 30%, and healthcare was also strong. That didn't read through to revenues, unfortunately, because of these supply chain constraints we've talked about. But we were up 1%, probably would have been up closer to 7% if we didn't have those challenges. But we saw real strength in our revenues and services, up 15%, again, led by aviation, but power as well. So we were really pleased with that. It's a little less exposed to the supply chain constraints. And from a margin and cash perspective, really pleased with the margin expansion of 110 basis points. And our free cash flow was up $1.7 billion year on year. So we know this is going to be a year where sequential improvement, like many years at GE, will be key. We very much, over time, have proven to be a second half story in many respects. But the combination of that strong underlying demand, led by aviation and healthcare, and the way I think we're improving the ways in which we run the business day in, day out, despite these inflationary pressures, despite what's happening in renewables and obviously in Ukraine, I think we're on our way. I really do.
Well, okay, so you have emphasized that the stock is cheap. Now, you bought $3 billion in authorization. Is this the kind of thing when you see stock down 7%, you go to your board and say, you know what, this is why we have $3 billion in firepower to buy stock?
Well, as you know, the board did recently put that authorization in place for a potential stock buyback. What we're focused on from a capital allocation, Jim, first and foremost, is making sure we set up all three of the companies as we prepare for our two-step spin to have a strong balance sheet to be investment grade as they prepare for their independent paths, with healthcare going early next year and power and renewables to follow a year after that. So that's really what we're focused on, but we haven't ruled anything out. We want to make sure we stay focused on the spin path. But we're going to look at options, including buybacks, but also other ways in which we might deploy capital to include complementing what we're doing organically with inorganic moves, because there's a lot of potential, again, particularly in aviation and healthcare, but also as we think about renewables and all that will be required for the energy transition. NGE very much intends to lead that energy transition, to be sure.
Well, I hope everyone knows that aviation is going to go over in a second. Everyone knows renewables got issues. Why are you waiting until 2023 for a company like healthcare, which is going to be premier, definitely better than Philips, maybe even with Siemens, and an industry where if you could somehow get, let's say, supply chain issues solved, this might be the gem in a group where people want med tech, Larry, and they want med tech badly.
Well, I think this is going to be an outstanding independent healthcare company. That's clear, Jim. Certainly in the short term, we need to work through those supply chain constraints to make sure our output matches up with our demand. But we've got over 1,000 people hard at work day in, day out, preparing for the healthcare spin. We just announced this program back in November. There's a lot to do to prepare to spin this company. Part of it is a function of the way that we have managed in a more centralized way over time. But we also want to make sure that the business goes out on the strongest possible foundation. So Pete Arduini, our relatively new CEO, and his team, I think, are doing all the right things to position this company to lead in innovation, to really be at the forefront of precision health. We're going to be able to do that in a way that not only drives the top line, but translates into good bottom line and cash performance. So I think this is a company that people will be excited about. I'm excited about my role going forward as non-executive chair. So we need a little bit of time to complete those preparations, but it's probably now less, as we sit here in late April, less than a year away. And if we can move sooner, we will. But that's the plan of record at the moment.
All right, let's talk about something that people are not excited about. Let's go power and renewables. I see a race to the bottom when it comes to wind. I see not enough new orders when it comes to natural gas, even though we know that natural gas may be the bridge fuel. We see that even from Mr. Curry. I'm wondering why we can't put together something which just says that this company is the answer for what is a quickly developing worldwide shortage after Russia-Ukraine.
Well, Jim, that's very much the view that we have. Again, we intend to lead in the energy transition. I think even before the events in Ukraine, you've seen a much more pragmatic perspective on the ways in which the world will meet the sustainability goals we've set for ourselves. I think we're pleased that we now have a real trilemma conversation underway where it's not just about sustainability, it's also about affordability and reliability the world over. And when you think about what we do in conventional generation, particularly with respect to natural gas, we're seeing a host of different conversations today than we were a year ago. You've seen some editorials recently where people who I think were somewhat skeptical about the role of gas in the energy transition are now embracing natural gas. We've got customers who are very keen to understand our technology roadmap with respect to how we make sure our gas turbines can run on hydrogen blends and ultimately full hydrogen as that infrastructure comes online. I think with respect to renewables, clearly our play is primarily in wind, both on and offshore. And certainly, particularly here in the U.S., we're in a soft spot in the U.S. market, and that hurts because we lead here. But if we can have Congress implement the tax incentives and other regulations to provide certainty with respect to the landscape, and in turn, customers can see how pricing is going to play out in this inflationary environment, I think we can get wind back on a better trajectory. Gas, wind coupled with what's required in grid modernization, I think sets us up to realize those long-term aspirations that I think society has at large. And again, it's a great setup for GE and both our power and renewables businesses.
All right, so let's go now to the good news, which is aerospace. Actually, quite surprised. All right, when I look at the company, I mean, now we're down 18 points on this split up. And yet at the same time, all that's happened is that aerospace has gotten better and better. And I think that you could argue from the airline numbers we saw last week, this is just the beginning. Are you surprised, given the strength in aviation, that people aren't a little more turned on about the stock of General Electric?
Jim, I have to admit, I'm not obsessing about the stock day in, day out. What I'm focused on is making sure what I'm focused on is making sure that we're performing, for our customers. We do that in a way that keeps this team intact and strengthening every day. And if we do that, the stock will take care of itself. It always does. And again, when you think about the tailwind that we have in commercial aviation, the improvements that we see in our military business, all that we've touched on with respect to healthcare and those opportunities for as far as the eye can see. And again, I think the role GE rightly will play in leading the energy transition, there's a lot of opportunity here for us. That coupled with what we've done from a lean and from a decentralization perspective sets these businesses up, I believe, to be on a path toward realizing their full potential. We'll do that as three independent companies, not one, but nonetheless, we will do that. And I think time will show that to be the case.
Okay, so Russia, Ukraine. When I think of Russia, I think of titanium sponge. Are you set up to be able to have enough titanium to be able to meet the orders?
Jim, that's particularly relevant in our aviation business, and I think the short answer is yes.
Really? What, did you manage to stockpile ahead of this?
Well, we didn't stockpile, but we've got a range of sources. I think we've got visibility here over the next year or so with respect to what we need from those sources, and we'll be able to diversify our footprint over time.
Well, I got to tell you, that's good news. And I want to end on good news because, Larry, I think that the breakup is bringing out value. Obviously, it's a torture time for American industrial. It won't always be. Thank you so much, Larry Culp, GE Chairman and CEO. Great to have you on the show.
And good to get him, Jim, to defend some of the negativity out there. The stock is down almost 9%. It has outperformed the broader market year.
I think that Larry's doing a terrific job under incredibly difficult circumstances. Let's not forget, he wasn't given necessarily a good hand. The supply chain problems with healthcare are just extraordinary. Remember, they dominate MRI and CAT, and it's just they can't make them. When you can't make them, you can't profit from them, you know?
It's across the board. 3M CEO Mike Roman just saying on the call, we expect supply chain challenges to persist for the foreseeable future.
One day we're going to be able to just say, oh, yeah, supply chain, and put a little.
Remember that? Remember that crisis?
Yeah.
Before we head to break.
We have to go here.
Okay. Time for the bond report, though. Want to take a look at Treasuries. See, they're faring this morning. They're getting bought again. Second day in a row, we're seeing some yield reprieve, lower yields.
Stocks. That's what's driving things.
2.74. It seemed to help some of the growth stocks yesterday. We'll see if that changes today. We're down 244 on the Dow. We'll be right back on Squawk on the Street. Dow down 283 in the early going. Got some pockets of strength there in terms of leadership. Merck, Verizon, Dow Chemical, which had a good quarter last week. Home Depot,
there you go. I'm
kind of a mystery there on consumer spending and housing.
Don't forget, this is the biggest weekend of the year.
And Amgen, we've got 3M is the biggest weight right now on the Dow. 3M and Visa, along with Boeing. So most stocks are lower here in the early going. Financials are the biggest loser in the S&P. We'll be right back. Time now for Stop Trading. Jim.
Two companies decide to split into three different companies. One is GE and one is J&J. Mood of the market, GE stock is now down gigantically 18 points. Johnson & Johnson is just a juggernaut. Why? Because all three divisions are doing incredibly well at J&J. I continue to think the stock could go to 200.
So what's the market's problem?
Well, the market's problem is exactly what you said about Pepsi and Coke and one surety.
It's gone up enough.
Yeah, J&J's med tech division. 2% growth to 8% growth. Larry Culp's MedTech division, not great. And we talked about the cash flow.
Negative, again, in the second quarter. Jim, what do you got on that tonight?
I've got Callaway Golf. I'm not a golfer, but most people are watch. And then I've got Chipotle. I am a Chipotle eater, and if you're not, I don't know what you're thinking. You know, what can I say? Brian is terrific. I know people are going to talk about labor costs, talk about food costs.
They've had pricing power.
I was going to say, how about the fact that their stuff's better, like PepsiCo? Have you tried the G?
The what?
The G.
The G?
The Gatorade G.
Oh, the G, the Gatorade. No, I haven't tried it.
Purple G.
I like the
diet.
The spicy snacks.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.